what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie the Radio Chick Ubellus, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another adventure here on Southern Sense. I'm your hostess with the least mostess, Annie, the Radio Chickadee, with my co-host, C.S. Bennett. Curtis, we have a lot going on today, and boy, the world is getting crazier and crazier by the moment.
I'm telling you, the news just won't stop, especially about what's going on up there in New York and on our college campuses.
Oh, man. And they're trying to say this is a repeat of the 1960s. I'm sorry. Those protests in the 1960s, the sit-downs, the sit-ins, and everything else they were doing, they were peaceful. But you have a group of people supporting Hamas that are blissful idiots. You got them chanting the Hamas slogans from the river to the sea, meaning they want to eradicate Israel off the face of the earth. They want to kill the nation of Israel. And they want to kill all the Jews and all those of us that support the Jewish state and the Jewish people. And you've got blissful idiots in Congress like AOC saying, oh, these are peaceful protests. Of course, NYPD is sending in the worst thugs to quell these protests. No, the protests are not peaceful. They are violent. They are burning flags. They're spitting on people. They're throwing things at people supporting Israel. And there have been instances off campus where people that are supporting Israel are getting beat up. You know, these are not peaceful protests. This is not a peaceful issue.
Yeah, I think it's just a continuation of what happened in Portland, Oregon, 2 years ago. And I think they've been waiting for a chance for a moment like this. And it has happened. So, and I'm talking about the people who are behind this. They've been waiting for opportunity like this.
Well, they always are. The agitators are there. And whatever the cause is, if they can do anything to destroy what America stands for, they will. They want to become another tyranny like you have in China and Russia and in the Middle East, in these Islamic states. Tell me of a democracy that exists in the world that is as good as we are, and there's only one, and that's Israel.
I don't know if you remember, but during some of those protests a couple of years ago, at least a block or two away from these protests were bricks piled up for the kids to use to break things and whatnot. So who put those pallets there? I mean, it was well organized. It was all around the city.
Absolutely. It was very well organized. And I've spoken about this, and you heard me when January 6th erupted. Weeks before it happened, I said, I'm getting reports of vans being parked near the Capitol within walking distance with Trump gear and stuff inside. And the people that parked them were walking away wearing hoodies and scarves over their face. Please tell me that that wasn't a setup. If you tell me that wasn't a setup, then you're another blissful idiot. The same thing with Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, and whatever the flavor of the month is, and now it's supporting Hamas. These are blissful idiots from college campuses being led by the nose. They have no idea what they're supporting. You think you want to support Hamas? I'm sorry. Islam still believes in slavery. You support Black Lives Matter? Well, you're supporting an organization that supports slavery. They want to... You want peace? You want everyone to get around and have diversity and equity? Well, they will not allow the Jewish people to exist. And once they eradicate the Jewish, they will come after the Christians. Oh, I'm sorry. They already have. Talk about the little girl that was murdered in Pakistan because she carried a Bible. She was only 7 years old. Tell that to the woman that did not wear the hijab in Iran, and the Sharia police murdered her. do that to the countless people that are being imprisoned in China and all these other nations because they sought freedom. Hamas doesn't stand for freedom. Hamas stands for Hamas. And Hamas is backed by Iran.
From what I understand, there was a young lady at one of the protests, and she was wearing a LGBT shirt that says that community supports, you know, Hamas.
Don't stand near a tall building, because with that shirt, you get tossed off the top of the tall building.
Right. He made a point to tell her, if you wore that over there, Hamas would toss you off a building. And the woman said, no, they wouldn't. Like it was a lie, you know.
No, tell that to the poor man that got tossed off. No, it wasn't one. I believe it was three that were recording. After that, the media stopped recording it.
Yeah, it's a shame because they are brainwashed. They really are.
Yeah, they are.
But then again, you have a lot of outside agitators that come into these situations, and they just put gasoline on the fire.
Oh, follow the money. Follow the money. If there's anything they can do to drive a wedge between fellow Americans, they will do it. And this is the new wedge, whether you support Israel or you support Hamas.
Well, we got to find a way to get to these college presidents and get them to act like they're supposed to. Don't negotiate with these people. Kick them off campus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, those that listen to our show know that we start off each and every show with dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going to go out to Deputy Sheriff Tucker Blakely of the Knox County Sheriff's Office. His end of watch was on Monday, October 2nd of 2023. Okay. This is from the Officer Dan Memorial page. Deputy Tucker Blakely succumbed to gunshot wounds he received while responding to a domestic violence call at the 3200 block of Denver Lane in Knoxville. At 11:30 p.m., deputies encountered an armed subject after receiving a domestic violence call. The situation escalated and a gun battle ensued. Deputy Blakely was struck twice. The subject was shot and killed by returning gunfire. Deputy Blakely was transported to UT Medical Center and remained on life support so his organs could be donated. He was a United States Army veteran and had served with the Knox County Sheriff's Office for 2 years. He survived by his wife, son, and brother. And this is from KnoxNews.com. Tucker Blakely was living his dream, helping people as a patrol officer, when he was shot responding to a domestic dispute on October 1st. The 29-year-old Knox County Sheriff's Office deputy was rushed to the University of Tennessee Medical Center, but died the next day. Blakely is survived by his wife, Katerina, and 5-year-old son. Sheriff Tom Spangler said, adding, he graduated from the Knox County Sheriff's Office Regional Training Academy in 2021. Sunday night was his last shift as a patrol officer. He was supposed to start canine handling school, said his brother Timothy Ty Blakely Jr. He already had his canine, Inuch. He was so excited, it seemed like a nightmare right now. Tucker Blakely always wanted to serve the public in some capacity, his brother said. He was extremely intelligent, Ty Blakely said. He had the mind of a brilliant lawyer, but he didn't want to help in the courtroom. He wanted to help out in the streets. After Tucker graduated from East Tennessee State University, he served in the Army Reserve as a combat medic for several years, his brother added. Once that service was done, he came back home, Ty said. He still wanted to serve. He served a little over a year in Knox County Jail, and then he had the opportunity to become a patrol officer. That was always his dream. He jumped on that and ran with it. Ty Blakely was 10 when Tucker was born, and he admitted he initially found his brother an annoying addition to the family. But as the two boys grew up, they became best friends. After I got out of the Army, and he was still in high school, he would spend summers with me and my wife. We would fish, we would hike, we were joined at the hip. While it might be natural for little brothers to look up to their big brothers, Ty said, the situation was reversed when it came to Tucker. I always looked up to him, he said. I can honestly say, I never saw him lose his temper. He was always calm. He always tried to use logic in every situation. He was loving, caring. There was not a better guy out there. I wish parts of me could be more like him. I'll work on that every day, as long as I'm here. And this is from KnoxSheriff.org. And they write, losing Officer Tucker Blakely is a painful reminder of how fragile life can be and how brave and selfless our officers are. Officer Tucker Blakely was 29 years old. He graduated from the Knox Regional Training Academy in 2021. Before completing KSCO's Regional Training Academy, Officer Blakely served as a correctional officer in our corrections division, where he was respected and loved by his peers and supervisors alike. Most recently, Tucker was selected as a candidate for KSSO's Canine Handlers course. His canine partner, Enooch, was placed with him 2 days before Tucker was shot. Tucker's had a dream of being a canine handler and was excited for his new step in his career. Unfortunately, Officer Blakely will never be able to live out that dream, the life of a servant taken far too soon. In addition to serving his community, Officer Blakely also served his country in the United States Army. His last act of service was as an organ donor. There are people we may never know alive today because of his servant spirit. Tucker lived as a hero. He died as a hero. We at Knox County Sheriff's Office are better for having known Tucker. The Knox County Sheriff's Office will remain faithful in honoring his memory. Today's show is dedicated to Sheriff Tucker Blakely. It is dedicated to all of the brave men and women out there that serve as first responders, be they law enforcement, firefighters, or emergency services. It's also dedicated to the brave men and women that serve in our military, from the birth of this great nation through today and into our hopeful future. We dedicate to each and every one of them this song by Tiffany, Soul of the Nation. May God bless each and every one.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free, we led with grace. Let it be seen, from sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, Father, Mother, sister, brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other, oh, for the soul of the nation, for the next generation. Let us be known as people of honor, yeah. time has come. We gave them hope. We made them strong. Let it be said. When we finished this race, we kept them free. Yeah, we led with grace.
We are back. You're listening to us, Southern Sense, wherever we are, everywhere, anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, God. It's a crazy world. We were talking about the protests going on the college campuses and the city near you supporting Hamas and the idiocy behind it. But also in the news, we have Trump on trial. But something happened yesterday that may give a little bit of a pause. Harvey Weinstein, those who remember the disgraced Hollywood producer, he's serving a 16-year sentence in California, not related to what occurred in New York. It was a separate court case. But in a 4-3 decision yesterday, New York's highest court overturned Harvey Weinstein's 2020 conviction on felony sex charges. A reversal that may have horrified and dismayed many women, but they basically, this was when the Me Too movement came into play. Well, what the courts agreed with is that Mr. Weinstein claimed that he was treated to a different level of justice compared to the average citizen, where most average citizens would have gotten a much lesser sentence. They were critical. They say that they made a critical error when he let prosecutors call as witnesses several women who testified that Mr. Weinstein had assaulted them, even though none of those allegations had led to charges. So they were based upon his conviction upon hearsay evidence. And if you're looking at what's happening in Trump's trial, this may end up going the very same way with the New York highest court. You may find everything that's going on with Trump right now in the New York courtroom being overturned because you have the standard being held for the average citizen with the law, and yet they're holding Trump up to a higher, not to an equal standard, but to a much higher standard. And simply because of his notoriety, his popularity, he's being treated differently. And we can see this by what the judge is doing. Why he never recused himself when he has a daughter that has worked for Nancy Pelosi, that has raised funds because of what is going on with Trump. She advertised that. And because his daughter is involved, this may have laid undue influence upon the judge, who is her father. They're allowing Trump to be gagged, but yet the witnesses and other people involved in this case are allowed to say whatever they want to say. Shouldn't be a blanket gag order on everyone involved, but no, only on Trump. And the standard being given Trump is much higher than the average person. So this is record breaking.
It is. It's highly unfair, and it's likely to come back to haunt them. I mean, just think of the excessive fines involved in these cases. I mean, it's unheard of, and it's unconstitutional. And I think those are going to be overturned.
Right. And right now, the Supreme Court has been hearing arguments on the presidential immunity. And again, it looks like it's going to go in favor of Donald J. Trump. Because the judges all asked for a definition of what is a public act as president or a private act as a citizen. Now, all the charges are based upon the acts he performed as president, yeah. Not as a private citizen.
Official, yeah.
So again, we're seeing bit by bit these court cases starting to crumble around them. And, Fannie Willis, she is now under investigation by the Integrity Review Board down in Georgia. So little Fannie's in the fire.
Oh, yeah.
So we're seeing a lot occurring around here. And the Never Trumpers are starting to pull their hair out.
Now, What impact do you think RFK is having in all of this, RFK Jr.?
Well, I think he shot himself in the foot with his pick of a vice president. To a person, everyone basically saying it was a bad choice. And some of his other more extreme views are starting to come to light. He tries to play the role that he's a moderate, middle of the road. But no, he is an extreme liberal. Yes, he's an anti-vaxxer. But still, if you look at his other positions, as in gun control, abortion, and other things like that, he is ultra-liberal. And would he be any better than Joe Biden? I think a tree stump is better than Joe Biden.
Well... I think the question with him is whether or not he's going to hurt Trump or Biden more as far as siphoning off the independents.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm thinking that a lot of people that are looking at what Creepy Uncle Joe is doing to the point where now he's not walking out to Marine One. Or Air Force One, or whatever you want to call it, his helicopter, normally, they would stride across the grass, make you look like I'm young and healthy and I'm full of vim and vigor. No, he was stumbling. He couldn't make it up the steps. So now he has an entourage that surrounds him, keeps the press at bay, so he doesn't address the press. So there's always someone within a few inches of him should he start to stumble. Hmm. And when I watched him walk across the grass today, he still had a hard time getting up the steps.
Hmm.
And they're using the short steps, not the steps that normally go into his cabin. So everything is being carefully orchestrated. So.
And it doesn't seem like his vice president is getting any love from their side, Kamala.
Queen Kamala Mella?
That laugh of hers. I don't know who's worse, her or Hillary.
Oh, no. I'm glad you mentioned Queen Kamala Mella, because also she's back in the news on the Will Report. And it seems like because of diversity and equity and whatever they else want to call it, the Secret Service has lowered their hiring standards to the point that it seems that she has someone, a member on her Secret Service staff, that has issues. And they don't go into exactly what the issues are, but it seems this person has mental issues and has gotten into heated conflicts with fellow agents insofar as punching their supervisor.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Other agents and officers within the United States Secret Service are asking questions about the agent's hiring process, whether or not the USSS did enough to look at the agent's background and monitor the agent's mental well-being. This is what is being reported. Now, the WLT report does know the name of the Secret Service agent, but is not revealing it for now. They're withholding it. The agent at the center of the incident has not been named at this time, but journalist Susan Crabtree revealed that they do know who it is. Matter of fact, a friend of mine, I don't remember if it's his brother or cousin, is in the Secret Service and has been on Joe Biden's detail a few times, as well as others. I'm sure he knows the name of whoever this agent is. We're not going to reveal it unless it's publicly revealed by an authoritative journalist, news source.
So they're saying that this guy has mental issues?
Yeah. There was questions about the hiring process and whether or not the person was vetted properly.
And he carries
to go through a Yeah, that's the scary part. Yeah.
He could shoot the president.
Well, Susan Crabtree reported on X, a breaking story. Sources within the Secret Service community tell me the agent signed to VP Kamala Harris was armed during the fight, that the gun was secured in the agent's holster until other agents physically restrained the agent and took the gun from the agent's possession.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Unheard of. Those guys are so professional, usually, that is.
Right. So, this is very interesting that I'm reading through the Washington Examiner even carries something about the Secret Service agent protecting Kamala Harris involved in a fight with the Secret Service, another Secret Service also assigned to Harris, and with other agents in the incident at Andrews Air Force Base. Wow.
Well, you know, affirmative action has always been known to lower the standards.
Yeah. And this is maybe the case, that their diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are not really working to get the best qualified person for the job. And that's the thing that you and I have been arguing for. Let the best person that's qualified for the job get it. Not based upon sex or color of skin or ethnic background or whether or not you're the flavor of the month. Do you have the skills and the mental acuity to perform the job put before you?
Yeah, and the same thing should go, you know, apply for our military.
It should apply for any and every job. Mm-hmm. It should be the best person gets it. Not based upon, you know, filling a quota or making you look like you're in with everyone else on the DEI and on the CRT and whatever else they got out there. Oh, please. I mean, if you have the knowledge, the training, and the skills, and if you are qualified and you have the mental acuity to handle it professionally, you got the job. I don't care what economic background you're from. Everyone should be given the equal opportunity to try. And whether or not you succeed, it's up to you.
Well, I make one exception.
Oh?
Sports. Let women be women when they play women's sports.
Well, that goes without saying.
Let the men be men.
What the Biden administration has done to Title IX is a travesty. An absolute travesty. And sooner or later, we already have had women severely injured. They allowed the trans go into the MME, the mixed martial arts, and there were two women that had their skulls cracked open. That's not good. That's not a good thing. No. You want a level playing field. Of course, in sports, you're going to have some people that are more skillful than others. Fine. But you're basically competing on the same level of at some point of skill. You have to meet a certain threshold before you're admitted into that sport. And if you can't meet that threshold, and if you're a man that cannot meet the threshold for a men's sport, then what makes you think you're qualified to go into a woman's sport? You're going to have certain physical attributes as a man that a woman does not have, dealing in upper body strength. That's a simple fact, a very simple fact. But when you dominate the sports because you were born genetically a male, you should not compete in a woman's sport. A genetic woman should be competing in a woman's sport. You reduce the incidence of violent injury if a woman competes against a woman. Now, a woman entering a man's sport, if you can meet that minimum level, wow. I'm sorry, I'm not going to get into a fight with you. Yeah. But then again, how often have women tried to, of course, compete? You saw a few women try to get into NFL as quarterbacks. But what happens is the men then try to protect her from serious injury. It's a natural instinct. So you end up causing the team to fail. So again, women should not compete in a man's, all men's sport. No, all men, men should not compete in an all women's sport. If you can find a sport that you can compete in equally, say as in racing, bowling, fine. Compete equally. But still, I'm sorry, MME.
Now, what do you think of that that match of the sexes when it came to Billie Jean King? And I think it was Bobby Riggs. I may be wrong. I mean, he was an older guy, past his prime.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
it was a publicity stunt, honestly. I mean, you got mixed doubles in playing tennis. Fine. But if it's men's tennis, it's men's tennis. I mean, she was trying to prove the fact that she was just as good as a man.
A feminist. And,
again, she was much younger. She was at her peak of performance. He was much older. And of course, he opened his mouth, which didn't help, but it became a huge publicity stunt. It sold a lot of ads. It brought the feminist movement to the forefront. But that was then. That was a one-time thing. Fine. But you don't make it permanent.
Now, what was Tiny Tim's role in all of this madness? Getting married on TV and tipping through the tulips.
going down memory lane. All right, we're waiting for our guest to sign in. I did get a response from her reminding her and our guest in the second half that we will be I'm just going to double check my emails to see if anything new has come up, see if I can find her email. And see if we can find her. Come on, let's look. I know I pulled her up the other day. Just bear with me, folks. I apologize. I'm just looking for her to make sure that, you know, she did respond that yes, she'll be here. And I told her it is Eastern Standard Time. And I'm looking on my phone for the email. And here we go. Oh, I put her down for 3:30. I'm going to have two guests at the same time. No, wait a minute. Holy cow. I don't know. I thought I put her at 3 o'clock. Yeah? I have her down as 3:30. I don't think I have a phone number for her. No, I don't have a phone number for her. Let me see if I can find Steve. I accidentally put them both. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send you this phone number.
Mm-hmm. To see if Steve can come in.
Yeah, let me see if I can copy this. Copy. All right, let's go back to messages. And I'm sending this to you as soon as paste. All right. See if he can call in right, if he can come in right away. All right. And we're going to take CS out. And in that case, we've got some Ron Edwards. Let me pull this up. And why isn't this showing? Pull myself.
Make America Great Again, known as MAGA, is a noble cause. But unless we the people make excellence great again, our republic's best days will only remain a fond memory. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's Face from the Edwards Notebook, brought to you by Constitutional Grounds Coffee, there was a time in our republic when Americans took pride in a job well done. No matter what the job, career, or entrepreneurial venture, excellence of results was expected and demanded. Excellence was taught from Christian pulpits and Jewish synagogues from the biblical chapters in Proverbs. Parents taught their children to seek to be excellent in all they do, whether it was schoolwork, household chores, etc. So long as the principle of excellence, along with high moral standards, were passed down to each succeeding generation, America was great. Because through excellence, along with high moral standards, our republic maintained her one-time position as the envy of the world and one nation under God. So yes, America can be great again, but only if we the people are willing to work to reestablish the standard of excellence. Let us make excellence great again, and then America will truly be great again. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific. To find out where, go to theronedwards.com. Make America Great Again, known as MAGA, is a noble cause. Are you willing to go where others refuse to go in order to achieve true progress? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's Page from the Edwards Notebook, brought to you by Constitutional Grounds Coffee. When God wants to make a man powerful, he always shreds him into pieces first. Never forget, it is always a process with God. Without pain, there would be no growth. So accept the pain, embrace the pain, because God is always there to ask you, do you really want to achieve your goals? And when you start walking with God, people will stop walking with you, not because they don't like you, but because you are about to sacrifice things they are not willing to sacrifice. And when God takes you to deep waters, not everyone will be able to swim with you. However, do not confuse movement with progress, because you can run in place and not yet achieve anything. I want you to take a moment and think, are you moving forward? If not, why not? I'm Ron Edwards. During the Cuban Missile Crisis and Americans' fear of war, President John F. Kennedy shared an inspirational 1961 inaugural address. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards on today's Page from the Edwards Notebook. Kennedy stated, and I quote, "The torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century tempered by war, disciplined by hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed. In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can only light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. With a good conscience, our only sure reward with history, the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own." Unquote. I'm Ron Edwards. Check out the ronedwards.com. Brought to you by Constitutional Grounds, the coffee you want in your cup.
All right, Curtis, how badly did I screw up? Oh, we have no sound, Curtis. Check your jack again.
I had to leave a message.
Oh.
So I told him to join us as early as he could.
Okay. All right. Well, I messed up. I have to admit, I messed up. I'm looking at it. I booked one at 3 o'clock and one at 3:30. But when I sent the reminder message, that both messages had 3:30 on it. My bad, folks. My bad. See how I'm going to get myself out of this one today. Oh man. And the funny part is Callie's coming on with her husband Joshua also. So it's going to be five of us. Oh my god. Ah, jeez. But we can get this to kind of like all work in so one way or another. Okay, this is going to be. Let's see how Annie gets herself out of this one today.
And just relating to our last guest last week, Mr. Jersky.
Yeah.
Were you able to get in contact with your people about what he's doing as far as exposing all these people in the roles, you know, that are dead people or they moved and all that?
Well, right now, we're in the middle of battling up for our primary, which is coming up June 11th. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to put together a forum with the three candidates running for Congress against Nancy Mace and her two contenders. So I've been spending this past week trying to get this together, and it looks like Mrs. Mace campaign is pulling her out of the forum, claiming that she can't make it. Meanwhile, they have already scheduled themselves for another location in the county in the morning, and mine is in the evening. We deliberately made sure it wouldn't interfere, nor is Congress in session on that date, May 20th. But now they're making excuses so that she doesn't have to face off against these other two in a forum. And we were very careful about scheduling this and setting up how the questions are asked and answered. Is it in stressing that when they answer the questions, they're answering the people in attendance. You're not addressing your other candidate you're opposing. You're not going to speak directly to them or talk about them. Talk about how you stand on the issue and what you intend to do for we, the people. And that way, each person is as if they're talking one-on-one to the audience. They get an equal chance to answer the same question. Mm-hmm. Time is limited. They also were going to be given 15, 20 minutes to introduce themselves individually to the crowd. They'll be allowed to have campaign tables set up that people can go and visit and get literature and talk to the candidates one-on-one after the forum. And we were trying to do everything to make it so it's not a debate, because we know Nancy Mace will not do a debate. And there's been a lot of vicious campaigning going back and forth now, Bud being slinged between one camp and Mace's camp. And I think because it's so close to the primary, she doesn't want to get herself into a situation where she, I don't know, she thinks she's going to embarrass herself. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But all I know is they just yesterday made a phone call to the person that's working with me on this one with another organization. We have four organizations putting this together. It's a joint effort for what we call North of the Broad. Here in our county is divided in half by the Broad River. So you have those that are south of the Broad and north of the Broad. So south of the Broad has their event in the morning and ours would have it in the evening. And four organizations working equally on this. Why she would not want to dress such a large group of people that probably would be supporting her, I don't know. So we mentioned an alternative date, which is what I'm trying to lock in, and I've been busy trying to work on that also. So I'm trying to lock in her on an alternative date and say, all right, listen, all right, we can postpone it and take it from this date and move it to this date instead. And supposedly she's supposed to be available on that date. We'll see. And I thought we had her locked in. But this is what we find that she does often. When she was running last time, the county GOP had invited her to a forum where the other candidates opposing her were here. And she said, yes, 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 we'll be here. And then when time came, she wasn't. She never showed up.
So do you have any idea where these folks stand on cleaning up the voter rolls? Registration rolls?
Well, my county led South Carolina in
cleaning it up.
Forward putting forward ways in which to increase election integrity. And a group of members from our county GOP got together, actually looked at the laws that are on the books and laws that were being proposed. And they tore them apart. And then they put them back together into a comprehensive package, which strengthened our elections. I know here in our own county, we went over the voter rolls and had a large number of people removed from them, people that moved out or deceased or for whatever reason, just no longer in the county. And we were able to clean the rolls that way, manually. I will be bringing it up to my county chair and let him bring it forward to the state chair. But we have our convention, the state convention, not this weekend, next weekend. And I'm a delegate to that. So I can bring it up to him when I see him there. We do have our guest on. Let me bring him in. And we want to welcome Steve Gorham. He is the author of a book titled The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And a new book coming up, The AI Revolution and the Looming Electrical Power Shortage. This is something that I've been talking about often. And what scares me is AI. And this is the new thing, the new craze that everyone is in on. But it scares the bejesus out of it, because I keep on flashing back to remembering Space 2000 with the computer HAL. Do you remember that movie?
2001 Space Odyssey.
Thank you. 2001 Space Odyssey with the computer HAL. And I'm thinking, we all saw the potential of AI long ago, but people don't see the danger in it, do they? Do you hear, Steve?
I'm there. Hi, Ann. Hi, CS. How are you?
Hey. All right, Steve.
AI is a big new thing. I'm not sure where it's going to go, but one thing I know is it's going to use a lot of electric power.
Dan, we're supposed to all be driving electrical vehicles by 2050, right? Where is this power going to come from? We got an electrical grid that can't handle what we have now. We see rolling blackouts like in Texas and California. How do they think they're going to support electric vehicles and then compound it with AI when we can't even power what we're using now?
Well, you're right. This has just struck me in the last month or two that we are about to enter a decade of when demand for electricity in the United States is going to be bigger than supply. And there's many, many indications. First, we have the three big green drivers, if you will. And as you mentioned, electric vehicles is one of those. The second one is electric appliances. The green movement is pushing people to get rid of their gas and propane stoves and water heaters and furnaces and buy heat pumps, which can work pretty well in the South, but not so well in the North. But these use a lot of electricity. The New England ISO, who's in charge of the grid in New England, published a paper a couple years ago and an analysis. And they basically said that the conversion to heat pumps in New England of appliances would actually draw more electricity than if everybody drove an electric car. So that's a pretty big demand driver. The third thing is that our federal government wants us to start a new green hydrogen fuel industry. And they want to use hydrogen for fuel in factories and heavy industry, but also in other places, maybe transportation. And the way they would do this is to produce hydrogen via electrolysis of water, which means you run an electric current through water.
Yeah, it's for electricity.
it uses huge amounts of power. To do just 1 kilogram of green hydrogen takes about 2 days worth of electricity at a typical U.S. house. And they're talking about wanting to produce billions of kilograms. And so it's a pretty big number. But then the biggest thing of all that dwarfs all of the rest of these is this new push for AI, artificial intelligence. We have Meta and Alphabet and Amazon and Microsoft building data centers all over the country. And these are big warehouses filled with servers. They're a couple acres in size, several hundred thousand feet. And not only new data centers, we have 2,700 data centers in the United States right now, roughly. And they use about 4% of our electricity. But they want to upgrade all these to AI cards for high-speed processing. And most of these come from NVIDIA. But when you do this, you use 6 to 10 times more electricity. So you're now talking about going from 4% of power demand to 20% for AI data centers within the next 10 years. And there's just no way they know how this is going to occur. And it's caught a lot of our power guys kind of unaware. I'm going to search for a quote here, but go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny because here in South Carolina, our legislators realized we had a problem. We were supposed to build two nuclear plants something like 20 years ago, and they charged us for these nuclear power plants that never occurred. So they refund part of our money on that. But now they realize they made a mistake when they stopped those plants from being produced. So now the passed legislation saying they're going to relook at coal, water, they're looking at nuclear and increasing the power plants, not green power plants, not just solar and wind, but they're looking actually at hydrocarbon. And this is what you write about in your book. Here we realize we got a problem. Green energy is not going to happen overnight. We still need the old sources to get us going.
That's a bullseye. You're right on. That's the first thing that's going to happen. By the way, let me read a quote here. This is from Jason Shaw. He's chairman of the Georgia Public Service Commission. And he said, quote, "When you look at the numbers, it is staggering. It makes you scratch your head and wonder how we ended up in this situation. How were projections that far off? This has created a challenge like we've never seen before." So in Virginia, in Georgia, in New York, California, Texas, and the Pacific Northwest, these data centers are going to demand a huge amount of power. And you're right. The first thing that's going to happen is they're going to quit closing coal and natural gas plants, quit shutting down nuclear plants, because we have to have these to try and meet this demand. And right now, coal and natural gas are about 59% of electricity in the United States. The Green Movement wants to shut all that down, but that is not going to happen because of this big demand imbalance.
Yeah, now I read something just in the last couple of days where they're trying to pass regulations that certain industries have to have zero emissions within a certain time period. Yeah. This is a job killer. I mean, first off, it'll stop innovation. People won't come out with new products. What's the point if you have to follow these odious regulations? It'll cut jobs because now they're not going to be able to produce as well as they did before. It'll raise costs if they do produce. And it's an economy killer. What are they thinking? Actually, it isn't what they're thinking. It's whose pocket they can line, because this is a multi-trillion dollar industry.
This is all part of the drive to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. The EPA has been trying to do this for many years now, since about 2016. They've been defeated twice in court. Most recently, a couple of years ago, they wanted to get all the power plants to switch to wind and solar, switch away from coal and natural gas. And the Supreme Court said basically, well, you can't do that. You're taking too big of a leap. I think there is called a major issues question or something like that. They said Congress has got to do something this big. So now instead they're trying to say, well, you can keep your traditional source of power, but you have to get rid of the emissions. So you're right. This is a big push for carbon dioxide capture and storage. They want to put that on all these coal plants and natural gas plants, but very, very expensive and isn't really working very well. An example is this plant in Canada, which I can't remember the name of, but it's either in Saskatchewan or Manitoba. Shell Oil has a plant up there that produces hydrogen and emits carbon dioxide to do it. They use the hydrogen with the oil sands to produce some chemicals. So they built this carbon dioxide capture plant. They got $650 million from the Canadian government, but it's supposed to capture 90% of the CO2, but it isn't. It's capturing about 40%, and some people have written a paper that said if you take everything into account, it's just about zero is what it picks up. So these plants don't work very well. I could give you another example, if you like. Wyoming passed a Senate bill in 2020 that said 20% of all electricity they should be capturing carbon dioxide from by the year 2030. Now, Wyoming is the biggest coal state in the United States. They get they mine 41% of our coal, and they get 80% of the electricity from coal-fired power plants. And so they thought they would capture the CO2. But the two big utilities looked at it and said, this is way too expensive. One of them found that it would cost $1 billion to retrofit just two plants for carbon dioxide capture and storage. And that was three times as much as the plants had the original value of the plants. So this technology is just hugely expensive. As you say, I don't think it's going to get there. It's going to be challenged by many states in court, and we'll just see how that comes out. But just another, you know, we're driven to do crazy things because of the fear of man-made warming.
Yeah, I think it's by design, though. I think that the EPA, they can make it difficult for the coal industry to do business and tie them up with a lot of regulations. They'll go out of business, and then they won't have to worry about the Supreme Court.
Does seem to have that effect. There's another thing, too, in the oil and gas industry. The EPA has come out with regulations that literally want to tax methane emissions, which is natural gas that might seep out of a well or a pipeline. I don't know how they can do that, because I don't think the EPA is allowed to tax things. That would have to come from Congress. But nevertheless, they passed these rules calling for taxes on methane. And again, as you say, CS, it's a drive to really hurt the oil and gas industry in favor of renewables.
Well, you know, people don't realize that the flatulence they exude is methane gas. So what's going to happen? We have to have some contraption, of course, our tush as we're walking around. I mean, I know some people that can blow their machines apart. But come on, we had a saying, it used to be, methane gas doth flow from thy...
I've got some pictures in South America. They were actually putting these bags of these big bags on the backs of cattle and hooking something to their rump so they could try and catch gas. It was a strange thing. But
we need CO2, and levels of CO2 in our atmosphere is extremely low compared to historical levels. And if we don't have CO2, how do we have plant life? If we don't have plant life, how do we have life?
CO2 levels are very low. 400 parts per million is only 4 molecules in every 10,000. The amount that humans could have added in all of our history is a fraction of one of those 4 molecules by our industry. It's very, very small. Yet people are doing handsprings over it. And that plus methane. Methane also is much smaller than CO2 even. We've really gone off the rails with this. Our society is being driven by this. Our financial industries, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the EPA. But this is going to break down. This is what I discuss in my book. This is the idea that we could get to net zero by 2050 is more than a reach out goal. It's an impossibility. And we're already seeing signs of this in many areas. And the coming electricity shortage is just going to kind of derail this effort of trying to get to net zero.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not wearing my I love CO2 button that Gregory Wrightstone gave me. But I challenge people when they start saying we got to save the environment, CO2, and they go on and on and on about that and love the electric vehicle. Matter of fact, I chewed out my husband the other day. He was raving about the electric, and I'm like, I had it. Name me a single thing outside of stepping outside of your home and breathing the fresh air God has given us. Name me a single thing that you come in contact with that does not pertain to something produced with petroleum products. And yet they want us to stop drilling. They want to stop, they're preventing us from drilling offshore because, oh, it's ruining scenery. But meanwhile, we have those winds, whatever you want to call them, out in the ocean causing marine life to beach itself because it couldn't stand the vibrations and whatever's coming off those wind turbines. And you have people complaining about having mental issues because they live near one of those wind turbines. they're causing more harm with trying to go green, and they're using up more of our resources, causing more pollution. So in order to get the lithium you need for the batteries and all the other rare earth minerals, you've got to mine that. That causes more pollution. Instead of saving the planet, they're going in the exact opposite direction and destroying it.
Every energy source has issues with environment or with pollution, and but we just need a common sense balance of those. The idea that CO2 is a big, big factor, that's the problem. I'll give you another crazy one here. Before he retired from his office a couple months ago, U.S. climate envoy John Kerry called for a global ban on coal-fired power plants. And you stop and you think about this for a moment. The numbers are kind of staggering. We have 6,500 coal-fired power plants globally, and they're building about 1,000 more across the world. And these produce 35% of the electricity in the world right now. They're the biggest producer of electricity. But we have a shortage of electricity across the world. There are 700 million people that don't have access to electricity today. Mm-hmm. There are dozens of hospitals in developing nations that don't have electricity in their hospital, if you can imagine. No air conditioning, nothing for the operating rooms. And then we have another 2 billion people that have blackouts or brownouts every day or every other day. And so, when I talk to audiences, I say, do you have an air conditioner? And everybody does in the U.S. pretty much. If you have an air conditioner, that one appliance uses more electricity than a third of the world's people get to use on any given day. But we got Mr. Kerry calling for shutting down all of the world's coal-fired power plants. And I parallel him. I compare him to Marie Antoinette, who said, if the poor don't have food, let them eat cake. Really, it is crazy. It would if you would shut down all the plants, people just wouldn't have electricity. It would be just a terrible, terrible thing. So we do need to reduce real pollution that are coming out of coal plants, the nitrous oxide, sulfur oxides, those sorts of things, particulates. But coal is very low, and we need to get people and help them grow their incomes and grow their economies. And low-cost energy is a way to do that.
Well, Steve, I have to apologize. When I sent you the reminder email, I kind of screwed up. You were supposed to be at 3:30 and the Fontanelli's at 3, but I accidentally have you both at 3:30. That's why we asked you to come on early. So I owe you another visit back here because there's so much more to talk about. And like I said, don't even start me on these electric cars because you're going to have a wild rant. Your book is really awesome. It is called The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. You also have a new one coming out very shortly, The AI Revolution and the Looming Electrical Power Shortage. So I've got to get you back on, and I'll shoot you an email. You let me know what days you have available, and definitely I'll give you a full hour because I love you that much.
Hey, Ann, we'll do something then. Thanks.
All right, thank you so much. And God bless all right. You do. All right, check out Steve Gorman, also at stevegorman.com. We have here from the Exodus Institute, the founders. Uh-oh, what happened here? Why can't we?
We can back out.
Let's see if we can do this. Hey, that works. That works. The Fontanellis, they're the founders of the Exodus Institute. Teeth and backwards, Joshua and Callie. Good afternoon. How are the two of you doing?
We're doing well. How are you?
All right. I was a couple of years back. I was having one of my tea parties. I still run a tea party since 2009. And one of the young mothers came in. She was asking about alternatives for education, because at that point in time, we had a school superintendent that was really wacky. And I tried communicating with this school superintendent when I first moved in here because I was hearing about the curriculum that was being given. And they were cutting out certain things that I felt was important in the development of the kids. And one of them was music. And I said, you don't understand, especially with girls, the correlation between having the ability to read and understand and enjoy music correlates directly into math and science skills. It's something with the beat, the rhythm, the mathematics that goes into creating music that helps the child develop a better mind. And I was arguing against cutting this one program out. And I grew up playing violin. And I, when it came to math, up until it came into higher calculus and whatever, I finally walked away from it. But I could be like chapters ahead of what the teacher was in the book because my mind was able to grasp fast. And the curriculum they have now in the public schools are going away from classical teaching, which incorporates critical thinking. And instead, they end up regurgitating what they're told, and they're no longer thinking critically. And we see a perfect example about that inability to think critically happening in our college campuses with these protests. If someone were to critically think about what they were actually supporting, they would not be supporting it. But you brought up this institute, and you're bringing classical traditional teaching into the person's home so they can homeschool their kids. And it's a phenomenal program. But what gets me, and you do take school vouchers in most instances, it's only $29 a month. People spend more at McDonald's for a meal. And for a McDonald's meal, they can have their kids homeschooled, and they know what they're being taught, and they're taught with good values and good understanding.
Well, we have
a pitch.
Programs. So just to clarify, we have two programs. We
right.
have a K-12 right. accredited program. Mm-hmm. And that one's not $29 a month. That would be not possible to pay our teachers if we did it that cheap. But that one's probably more than national average, you know, depending on what you're looking for, you know, what exactly you need. There's a lot of options there. But the for private schools, it's probably about the national average, maybe $2,000 to $8,000 a year. But the program that we do, which is the anti-woke classes, which are basically supplemental courses for if you already have a homeschool program, or if you're a public school student or, you know, college student or whatever, and you just want some extra lessons that are going to debunk all the nonsense and teach critical thinking, those are the $29 a month.
Just the Young Patriots Academy, you call it.
Yes.
All right, and you write down there, it counters the lessons taught in public schools. It's fully online, relevant lessons on current events. That's really important. Christian values and critical thinking skills. And it's taught by the two of you. And this could be done, as you said, in conjunction with the K-12 program or augment what you're doing in whatever school that your child is attending, whether it's public or private.
So these are lessons that are, like, for example, I have lessons on Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver, because I was noticing that during Black History Month at our public schools, they used to learn about those historical figures, those Black historical figures. And then it started turning into Black Lives Matter Month. In fact, in the public school that I used to teach at, they had posters of George Floyd and Obama and Kamala Harris in the hallways instead of these great American Black heroes that we should be learning about in Black History Month, posters of Breonna Taylor, no posters of George Washington Carver, no posters of Booker T. Washington. And so there's a
Frederick Douglass.
Exactly. So there is a, they're just changing everything in our public schools. And we decided, you know what, there's a hole in what our children are learning across America, and we decided to fill that need and fill that hole.
Well, you know, the county I live in here in South Carolina was home to Robert Smalls, whose birthday was 150 years ago, just this past month, and also Harriet Tubman. I mean, two powerhouses in the Civil War and in civil rights. These are things that kids, unless you live here in this county, are not going to learn. And you say those names to someone from, say, New England, they're going to, who? Ask them who Crispus Attucks is. Would they know?
Students to be, especially Black kids, Black and brown kids, they want them to be victims. They want them to be, woe is me, the world's against me. So they focus on people, you know, like George Floyd, instead of focusing on victors. and people who we have a whole section in our Young Patriots Academy called Hero Stories. And that's the idea, is to give students role models of people who overcame their circumstances and became great, you know, out of, you know, small beginnings. And that's the kind of stuff they don't want kids to learn as much, because, you know, then you're teaching them, oh, you don't need the state and you don't need all these handouts and you don't need to feel like you're a victim. You can actually be great no matter how you start. And, you know, that's the American dream. Like, we have lessons. My wife has a fantastic lesson on the American dream, you know, teaching how it's not just for white people. It's not something that doesn't exist anymore. It's still, you know, you can come from nothing to the heights in America today. Of course, it's getting harder and harder, especially
the last 3 years.
Yeah. But it's still, I mean, compared to any other country in the world, you know, it's incredible the opportunities that are.
Well, we know that the left are doing what they're doing to push an agenda, their agenda. And anything that will help advance that, they'll do, even if it means dumbing down our children, you know, our future generation, which they are doing a good job. If you can, you know, see what's going on the campuses and what's going on in the failed public schools or government run schools.
Absolutely. I mean, we're at a crisis point with our public education in this country. I mean, if you think about it, our eighth graders, the latest test results that came out, only 25% of them are testing math proficient. And I think around 40% are testing reading proficient. I mean, that is an F. That's an F grade for our public education. I think an F is 60% and under, and we're now going around 40 and 20% kids being proficient. So it's, what are we going to do in 20, 30 years when we have a completely illiterate nation that can't function, do basic skills, basic functions, which is where we are headed if we don't do something right now. And that's not even counting all of the leftist brainwashing that's happening in our schools. Let's just take that aside, put that aside, even though that's just as bad as the fact that these kids are failing. And we already have a failing public school system.
And some of the schools don't even teach cursive writing anymore. So how are they going to read? How are they going to read the Constitution in its original form?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I used to implement that when I was a public school teacher in California. I put it in there, even though it wasn't in the curriculum. I made the kids learn cursive, you know, in high school because they weren't learning it anywhere else. But I mean, it's sad because the students are failing, and we know that they're becoming illiterate and all this. And it's on the one hand, it's an F. Our schools, our public schools are earning an F. On the other hand, do that. They want us to have a dumbed down, illiterate populace, which is dependent upon government. You know, that's where we're headed. You know, I mean, the competency crisis that's coming in our country. You know, you talk to people who are trying to hire some of the next generation of kids, and these kids don't know how to do anything. And we're setting up a situation where you're going to have a socialist dictatorship if for society to even semi-function, because these kids can't take care of themselves. And that's why you want to teach that. That's why people like Booker T. Washington and, you know, that had a school where you're teaching kids life skills and they're learning all these trades and all that kind of stuff is just, it's so crucial, but that, you know, they're trying to take that away today. We're trying to fill that gap in a little bit the best we can.
Yeah. You got a point there, because if things get so bad, like all the riots and things, they can declare martial law. Mm-hmm. And from there, full dictatorship.
Yeah.
The ideal for education, if you were just talking very idealistically, the ideal would be children at home learning from their parents for probably the majority of the stuff that they need to learn. And, you know, that's talking like an ideal society where, you know, there's a bunch of small businesses and your kid can come with you to work and learn the trade with you or something like that and learn life skills at home with you. Most people don't have the luxury of that. But if we're trying to get close to that ideal, we're trying to empower parents to have the education at home where, okay, maybe it's not the ideal where you have the time to teach the kid yourself, but they're at home and you can supervise and you can see what your student's doing without actually having to do the teaching yourself for all of these subjects. So that's why our program, I think, really fills fills the gap there, where we're providing accredited program with a variety of skills. Like, we have French and horticulture and all these different electives available at our K-12 program, but in your home, where you can be there and look over your child's shoulder whenever you want to, but you don't have to do any of the teaching and the grading and all that kind of stuff. So it's really the best of both worlds. We're taking advantage of the technology that we have. We're turning lemons into lemonade. They forced on us an online education thing. Okay, well, we're going to try and make it into somewhere close to the ideal. So that's what we're trying to do.
Well, you're both young. You both are teachers. When did you come up with this idea? Was it because of COVID, or were you doing this beforehand? When did you start this?
We've had a dream of wanting to do a school, before public school. It was like, okay, learn how to, get that education to be a teacher, get experience being a teacher. And then maybe in the future, we had this dream that we would open a school in the future. I've had that dream for a long time because it's in my faith tradition that we love opening those kinds of schools for hundreds of years. Back in the days of Booker T. Washington, our church has had schools connected to that same type of self-sufficient school time. So we already had that idea. But then when COVID hit and it was, okay, everything's forced online.
Sorry about that.
Is that a house
phone? Does it still exist?
Sorry about that.
What's the bill like for a house phone nowadays? I have no idea.
Oh, it's part of my internet, so it's all
okay. Yeah.
Normally I shut that off, but I must have forgotten. It's sitting behind the computer, so I don't even see it.
Yeah. Well, I think
my bad. It's going in the drawer.
I think because of COVID and because so many kids were staying home or being taught at home, that the parents got to really see what was going on in the school system. And there were school systems that were trying to keep the parents from not, looking over their child's shoulder at these lessons. How they could do that, I don't know. But the parents, they didn't fall in line with that. They wanted to know what was going on. And I think they saw all this wokeness. So they,
the online teaching. And then
I think that helped your industry more than anything.
It opened up people's eyes to the possibility because they were forced to do it anyway. It opened up our eyes as well because we were forced to do it as teachers. We had our schools. We did, from March of 2021, we did the rest of that school year and the majority of the whole next school year, over a full calendar year of online teaching. And so we learned how to do it, and then it was, okay, people are familiar with it. We learned how to do it. Let's open our own school and provide parents with this opportunity to get out of public schools.
We also don't feel comfortable as public school teachers anymore, even though I loved what I did. I taught the English learners and the low readers, the students that were behind in reading, and I was born to be a teacher, especially a middle school teacher. They say middle school teachers are born, not made, because it is a difficult age. And I loved it. But some of the things that were coming into the school and coming into my classroom, even, that I couldn't continue to fight against this last 5 years, we're getting pushed out. People that are right-leaning, that are conservatives, that are Christians, we know, you either have to be silent and go against your convictions, or you're going to risk being fired if you stand up against a lot of the stuff that they're bringing into the classrooms and bringing into the schools.
Yeah, we knew we were going to be fired at some point. So it was let's get out before we get kicked out. And can I brag about my wife a little bit? Her classroom.
We love it when you brag about us.
Her classroom, because she went into teaching before I did. She had like 15 years experience teaching. I was only in the public school system for a few years. She was there for years and years. And I went into her classroom to observe before I taught. And it was like walking into like a health spa, picture soft music, and just orderly, calm environment. Just kids at their desk quietly working. She's just, you know, observing all this organization. The kids running the classroom themselves because she would give them jobs. I mean, she was just the exemplary.
And then we would have class parties where it was wild and crazy.
Yeah, and she liked that. And yeah. She liked that. Let them have fun.
Yeah.
Right? But she ran such a, and it's sad because they took that away from her.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she would ideally like to still be in the classroom, but we can't.
I mean, no.
They won't, you know, unless you're willing to, you know, call a boy a girl and teach all this nonsense, we can't do it. We know we're going to get fired if we try.
Yeah, that's such a shame. But I think the pendulum's starting to swing back. Parents have gotten involved now more than they would have in the past. But are you also, we only have a few minutes left, but are you also working with, say, these homeschooling pods where parents will get together and the kids will all, one parent or two parents will be working with all the kids instead of having each individual family dealing with it alone?
Where if parents are interested in doing something like that, whether it's a micro school, whatever you want to call it, a pod, a church school, we can use, they can come to us and use our accreditation, our program, and have that as the backbone of their micro school or their church school or whatever. And we can show them how to do that. And we can, I mean, all over the country, even in other countries, because we have a global systems accreditation for that program. You support getting that going. I mean, imagine a situation where, let's say, you know, a handful of parents and they have a bunch of students at a church and they want to use the church building during the week that nobody's using, right? And they meet there. Or, you know, maybe they take turns at a parent's house or whatever they're wanting to do. But they have our online school to do the teaching, right? Mm-hmm. And so really the parents are just there to make sure the students keep going and you know, kind of keep an eye on them, maybe take turns on who's the ones kind of, you know, watching them and so forth. Something like that, absolutely. Or if they wanted to hire a facilitator, pull their money together and use our curriculum still as the backbone, we could absolutely help on that kind of stuff.
Are these all pre-recorded, the lessons, or do you actually do them live?
So when it comes to the lessons that we teach, the supplemental, the Younger Patriots Academy, the anti-woke stuff, they're on demand. It's not live. It's on demand. You can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on your computer, turn in the lessons on your computer, all that kind of stuff. When it comes through to the accredited K-12 program, the full online school, you have the option. And it depends on how much you want to spend and how much you think your child needs and whatever your needs are from your family. So you can do generally what most parents do is like an on-demand hybrid kind of thing where the lessons are on demand, you have the materials, you do it on your own time. But then there's like maybe once a week or so, depending on the class, that you're meeting for a live session. And then you're emailing the teacher whenever you want and that kind of thing, asking questions. So usually parents do like a hybrid like that. But you can get more live sessions or less, depending on, you know, your price range and that kind of thing.
Wow. Sounds really, really fascinating and interesting. And one thing I always tell people, even if you don't have kids, get involved with what's going on with your school board. Attend the meetings because your tax dollars are paying for that education. And if you want to spend, make sure your tax dollars are spent wisely, find out what's going on. I have shown up at school board meetings. And at one time, superintendent that is now gone, that I was fighting, they had this thing, it was Common Core Math. And they were trying to get the school board, because they were missing a member, having a partial vote. So instead of having a full vote for an individual, they're giving them like 3/4 of a vote. And I sat there front row with a big poster that said, "This is not Common Core Math." And I upset him. I was so touched. He was upset. You can see how touched I was. Really touched. But guys, it has been great having you on. It is the Exodus Institute, and it's thinkexodus.org. The Fontanelles, Joshua and Callie, God bless you for the hard work you do. And I am going to shoot this out to my Tea Party members, because I do know there's some parents in our area that are looking for an alternative to public schooling.
Thank you for having us.
Sharing.
Yes.
All right. God bless. Thank you very much. All right. That was the Fontanelles. And we're back to our last 3 or 4 minutes to the show. Holy cow, the whole thing is going so fast, even though I screwed up. So sorry, guys.
It all worked out.
All right. Well, we got Mark Capscott back next week. And we'll see what we come up with next week. I'll bet I screw up again. But that's all we got for today, unless you got one last thing to say, Curtis, before we sign off.
Just have a great weekend and a safe one, and make America great again.
All right. We'll be back next Friday, same bat time, same bat station. All right. Till then, we say good night and God bless.
I'm praying for this land I love, America, America, the home of the free. But there are people making plans to change America. They've no respect for her, or what matters most to me. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross. Mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. And I still believe in God we trust and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not America. Do you hear our battle cry across America? We've got to rescue her. You know it's up to me and you to see the truth behind their eyes. Don't change America. God bless America and the red, white, and blue. For the friends I have loved and lost, and I still believe in God we chose, and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America. Save America.